I hadn't a lot of faith in the liquid paraffin. I suppose I suggested it for the sake of doing something while I played nervously with the idea of operating. And next morning the picture was as I expected. Monty was still rigid-limbed, still staring sightlessly ahead of him, and an oiliness round his rectum and down his tail showed that the paraffin had bypassed the obstruction.
"He hasn't had a bite now for 3 days," Harry said. "I doubt he won't stick it much longer."
I looked from his worried face to the little animal trembling in the pen.
"You're right. We'll have to open him up straight away to have any hope of saving him. Are you willing to let me have a go?"
"Oh, aye. Let's be at the job. Sooner the better."
He smiled at me. It was a confident smile, and my stomach gave a lurch. His confidence could be badly misplaced, because in those days abdominal surgery in the bovine was in a primitive state. There were a few jobs that we had begun to tackle fairly regularly, but removal of a hairball wasn't one of them, and my knowledge of the procedure was confined to some rather small print reading in the textbooks. But this young farmer had faith in me. He thought I could do the job, so it was no good letting him see my doubts. It was at times like this that I envied our colleagues in human medicine. When a surgical case came up, they packed their patient off to hospital. But the vet just had to get his jacket off on the spot and make an operating theatre out of the farm buildings. Harry and I busied ourselves in boiling up the instruments, setting out buckets of hot water and laying a clean bed of straw in an empty pen. Despite his weakness, the calf took nearly 60 cc's of Nembutal into his vein before he was fully anaesthetized. But finally he was asleep, propped on his back between two straw bales, his little hooves dangling above him. I was ready to start. It's never the same as it is in the books. The pictures and diagrams look so simple and straightforward, but it's a different thing when you're cutting into a living, breathing creature with the abdomen rising and falling gently and the blood oozing beneath your knife. The abomasum I knew was just down there, slightly to the right of the sternum, but as I cut through the peritoneum, there was this slippery mass of fat-streaked omentum obscuring everything. And as I pushed it aside, one of the bales moved, and Monty tilted to his left, causing a sudden gush of intestines into the wound. I put my fat of my hand against the shining pink loops. It would be just great if my patients inside started spilling out onto the straw before I'd even started.
Pull him upright, Harry, and shove that bale back into place, I gasped.
The farmer quickly complied, but the intestines weren't at all anxious to return to their place, and kept intruding coyly as I groped for the abomasum. Frankly, I was beginning to feel just a bit lost, and my heart was thudding when I came upon something hard. It was sliding about beyond the wall of one of the stomachs. At the moment, I wasn't sure which. I gripped it and lifted it into the wound. I had hold of the abomasum, and that hard thing inside must be the hairball. Repelling the intestines, which had made another determined attempt to push their way into the act, I incised the stomach and had my first look at the cause of the trouble. It wasn't a ball at all, rather a flat plaque of densely matted hair, mixed freely with strands of hay, sour curd, and a shining covering of my liquid paraffin. The whole thing was jammed against the pyloric opening. Gingerly, I drew it out through the incision and dropped it in the straw. It wasn't till I had closed the stomach wound with gut, stitched up the muscle there, and had started on the skin that I realized that the sweat was running down my face. As I blew away a droplet from my nose end, Harry broke the silence.
"It's an hell of a tricky job, isn't it?" he said.
Then he laughed and thumped my shoulder.
"I bet you felt a bit queer the first time you did one of these."
I pulled another strand of suture silk through and knotted it. "You're right, Harry," I said.
"How right you are."
When I'd finished, we covered Monty with a horse rug and piled straw on top of that, leaving only his head sticking out. I bent over and touched the corner of the eye. Not a vestige of corneal reflex.
God, he was deep.
Had I given him too much anaesthetic? And of course, there'd be surgical shock too. As I left, I glanced back at the motionless little animal. He looked smaller than ever, and very vulnerable under the bare walls of the pen. I was busy for the rest of the day, but that evening my thoughts kept coming back to Monty. Had he come out of it yet? Maybe he was dead. I hadn't the experience of previous cases to guide me, and I simply had no idea of how a calf reacted to an operation like that. And I couldn't rid myself of a nagging consciousness of how much it all meant to Harry Sumner. The bull is half the herd, they say, and half of Harry's future herd was lying there under the straw. He wouldn't be able to find that much money again. I jumped suddenly from my chair, It was no good. I had to find out what was happening. Part of me rebelled at the idea of looking amateurish and unsure of myself by going fussing back, but I thought I could always say I had returned to look for an instrument. The farm was in darkness as I crept into the pen. I shone my torch on the mound of straw and saw with a quick thump of the heart that the calf had not moved. I dropped to my knees and pushed a hand under the rug. He was breathing anyway, but there was still no eye reflex. Either he was dying, or he was taking a hell of a long time to come out. In the shadows of the yard, I looked across at the soft glow from the farmhouse kitchen. Nobody had heard me. I slunk over to the car and drove off with the sick knowledge that I was no further forward. I still didn't know how the job was going to turn out. Next morning, I had to go through the same thing again, and as I stiffly walked across to the calf bin, I knew for sure I'd see something this time. Either he'd be dead, or better. I opened the outer door and almost ran down the passage. It was the third pen along, and I stared hungrily into it. Monty was sitting up on his chest. He was still under the rug and straw, and he looked sorry for himself, but when a bovine animal is on its chest, I always feel hopeful. The tensions flowed from me in a great wave. He had survived the operation. The first stage was over, and as I knelt, rubbing the top of his head, I had the feeling that we were going to win. And, in fact, he did get better, though I have always found it difficult to explain to myself scientifically why the removal of that pad of tangled fibres could cause such a dramatic improvement in so many directions. But there it was. His temperature did drop and his breathing returned to normal. His eyes did stop staring, and the weird stiffness disappeared from his limbs. But though I couldn't understand it, I was nonetheless delighted. Like a teacher with his favourite pupil, I developed a warm proprietary affection for the calf. And when I happened to be on the farm, I found my feet straying unbidden to his pen. He always walked up to me and regarded me with friendly interest. It was as if he had a fellow feeling for me, too. He was rather more than a year old when I noticed the change. The friendly interest gradually disappeared from his eyes and was replaced by a thoughtful, speculative look. And he developed a habit of shaking his head at me at the same time.
"I'd stop going in there, Mr. Eric, if I were you," Harry said one day. "He's getting big, and I reckon he's going to be a cheeky booger before he's finished."
But cheeky was the wrong word. Harry had a long, trouble-free spell, and Monty was nearly 2 years old when I saw him again. It wasn't a case of illness this time. One or two of Harry's cows had been calving before their time, and it was typical of him that he should ask me to blood test his entire herd for brucellosis. We worked our way easily through the cows, and I had a long row of glass tubes filled with blood in just over an hour.
"Well, that's a lot in here," the farmer said. "When you have the bull to do, we're finished."